Now we're into a somewhat normal chapter. By normal, I mean it's not going to be all over the place as far as topics like that last chapter. This chapter, though, has to do with chemistry, which shouldn't surprise you. I've already told you this course is going to be as much about chemistry as it is about biology. Biology really is just a subset of chemistry. Biology, really, when you get down to it, biology is just chemistry. When you get down to it, chemistry really is just physics, a subset of physics. When you get down to it, physics really is just math. So everything really is just math. But we're focusing here on chemistry, and in the opening slide, what we see represented by these pictures is a chemical reaction, which is an important part of chemistry. A chemical reaction is an important change, it can be a striking change, but in any given chemical reaction, you have some number of so-called reactants. Those are the substances that you have before the reaction occurs. In this case, there are two. It doesn't have to be two. So sodium and chlorine are the reactants in this case. And in the course of the chemical reaction, those reactants react, and that produces new stuff. The so-called products, which can also be any number of things. In this case, it's one thing, sodium chloride. All right. So any chemical reaction transforms reactant into product. And we don't usually use pictures. We usually use symbols. But there's an arrow in most representations of a chemical reaction to show you the wall between reactants and products. Things on the left side of the arrow are the reactants. Things on the right side are the products, the output. And this example can illustrate how drastic a change it can be when a chemical reaction occurs. So we have two reactants here, sodium and chlorine. Sodium is a metal, and it is a highly reactive metal, very dangerous stuff. You would never want to touch sodium, pure sodium metal, because it is so highly reactive that it'll explosively react to just the small amount of moisture on your skin, which is why this guy's wearing gloves. Okay, so it's stuff that will kill you easily, sodium. Nothing you want to be around. Chlorine gas, pure chlorine, also stuff that can kill you by itself. Very highly reactive, which is why it's used, for instance, to disinfect things, chlorinated pool, for instance. It kills stuff. So you don't want to be around either one of these things, these two reactants. But if you get the two together, sodium and chlorine, they will react, which means that they will rearrange the particles that they're made out of originally into new rearrangements of particles, creating new substance, sodium chloride. And sodium chloride not only won't kill you, you can't live without it. So a simple rearrangement of particles transforms two deadly things into one thing you can't live without. Without adding any material or removing any material, it's the same set of particles. They're just put together differently. And that happens in any given chemical reaction. Well, I mean the rearrangement occurs in any given chemical reaction. So let's look at another example of a reaction, slide 2. Here we have, once again, two reactants. Hydrogen, which is a molecule, and oxygen, which is a molecule. When they react, they form water. Water is not like hydrogen. Water is not like oxygen. It has its own properties. But by looking at it instead of pictures as ball and stick cartoons, where the balls are atoms and the sticks are bonds between the atoms, you can see what I told you before about chemical reactions. There's nothing, there's no substance, no particles added or subtracted. It's the same atoms that you have at the end that you started with, they're just arranged differently. And that different arrangement of the atoms can drastically change the properties of the substance. This is two ways of looking at exactly the same reaction, by the way. The one on the bottom is how we usually see things, with chemical formulae instead of cartoons or pictures. All right, now let's talk about elements. It would be nice if chemistry were a prerequisite to this course. It's not, so you don't have to have chemistry coming in, but it would be helpful. On the other hand, the chemistry people say it's helpful to have biology as a prerequisite for chemistry, so there's no way to win in this. But some of you might have a chemical background, some of you might not. If you do, just sit back and hopefully learn something even new. But anyway, let's talk about an element. Well, what is an element? What makes something an element? An element is a substance, but there's plenty of substances that aren't elements. What is it that makes an element an element? Well, the periodic table of the elements that we see on the wall back here is an exhaustive listing of the elements. There's no limit to the number of substances. And we've created already millions of different substances or chemicals. And there can be no limit to that. But despite that huge number of substances, all of them use some number of just a small listing of elements. The universe contains only a little bit over 100 elements. And in fact, these ones, when we get into the hundreds, those exist for only a tiny fraction of a second because we produce them in a laboratory. They're not really naturally found. So there's something special about these roughly 100 substances that we call elements compared to the rest of the substances. And what that is and what defines an element is that it's a substance made out of or containing only one kind of atom. All materials are made out of atoms. An element is made out of only one kind of atom. So hydrogen, which is the simplest and first listed of the elements, a sample of hydrogen, however big it is, every one of those atoms in that sample is a hydrogen atom as opposed to a different kind of atom. And similarly for the other elements. All right? Most substances, though, are compounds, like sodium chloride in the previous example of a chemical reaction. Table salt, we know it as. It's one of many salts. But sodium chloride is a compound. Compounds are substances made of at least two and maybe more elements. So sodium chloride, as the name implies, has sodium, that's one element, and chlorine, another element, combined into one substance. All right, now, I say there's roughly 100 elements, but any given organism really not only needs a small fraction of those 100, but many of those 100 elements would kill the organism. So in your own body, for instance, you don't want to have all 100 of those elements, or you wouldn't be here if you did. Organisms in general, this is for the human body, but this is roughly true for just about any organism, have a certain number of elements that are essential. They can't live without them. But these first four make up the bulk of your body or any organism's body. And these are the four particularly special elements: oxygen, carbon, hydrogen, and nitrogen. As a fraction of your overall atoms is most of you, about 96% of you. But similarly for just about any other organism. These other ones, though, even though they're not as nearly as prevalent in your body, you can't live having zero of these. So all of these other ones are necessary, but most of them are necessary in just trace amounts. A little is enough, and a lot is actually harmful. Okay? But oxygen, carbon, hydrogen, and nitrogen we're going to pay particular attention to, because all organisms are made fundamentally out of those. And by the way, well, I'll get into that later. Slide 4. Now this cartoon, I haven't bitched about the clock yet, but I will, and they'll get it fixed. But stop. Don't think you have to sit because I'm still talking. If I go over, just tell me or start leaving. Anyway, this slide 4 is a cartoon of an atom. And cartoons, of course, are never true, but this is really not true for multiple reasons. This is a lie. But it's good to actually picture things this way, just so that you have some image in your mind, even though it's not the truth. What is true about it is that any given atom, as small as it is from our point of view, you know, quadrillions of these in your body, any given atom is made of even smaller things. So an atom is not a fundamental particle because it's made of even smaller things. And those more fundamental particles that are even smaller than atoms, since they are smaller than atoms, are called subatomic particles, below the level of the atom. Well, if this were not a biology course, we could talk about the fact that even the subatomic particles that I'm about to mention are not fundamental. They're made of even smaller things, but that's not so important in biology. We're going to talk about just the three major subatomic particle types. And those are electrons, protons, and neutrons, as you see in this cartoon. Well, let's talk about neutrons first. A neutron gets its name because it is electrically neutral, meaning that a neutron does not have an electrical charge. It's neutral. And that's the major way that you can tell it apart from a proton, because they, even though it's not identical size and mass, protons and neutrons are almost exactly the same size. All right? But a proton has an electrical charge. And specifically, it has a positive charge. An electron, on the other hand, is easy to tell apart, if you were really looking at things at this scale, from either a proton or a neutron, because it is much, much smaller than either a proton or a neutron. But the other way that you can tell it apart is that an electron is also charged. It's just that it's negatively charged. Okay? So those are the three that we care about in this course, the three subatomic particles. And not every atom has all three, as we'll talk about next time, but most do. I'll see you in the laboratory, which has a